Welcome to the Authority Playbook. I'm Jeff Brandeis, and today we're talking about the strategies that help you stand out, be seen, and be heard. You're watching Now Media Television. Welcome to the Authority Playbook. I'm Jeff Brandeis, and today I want to talk to you about something every leader experiences, but not every leader knows how to use. Disagreement. In business, disagreement can break momentum, create tension, and weaken trust. But when it is handled with skill, it can also sharpen strategy, reveal blind spots, and become a real competitive edge. My guest today is Shelby Jo Long, a professional speaker, communication strategist, four-time CEO and founder, and the creator of Invitational Dissent. She's also president of the Strategic Advisor Board, where she advises companies on leadership alignment and strategic growth. She brings a rare combination of experience as a former national champion, collegiate debater, longtime professor of business communication, and executive advisor who helps leaders navigate tension, make smarter decisions, and build cultures where innovation thrives. Shelby, welcome to the Authority Playbook.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I'm glad you're making it today. So Shelby, yes. In this opening segment, I want to frame disagreement as more than just conflict. I want to position it as a leadership tool, which very few leaders probably ever do. So let's focus the conversation to help viewers understand that authority is not about avoiding tension. It's about leading through tension with clarity, confidence, and trust. So Shelby, most leaders say they want honest feedback. But inside many organizations, I've seen it, I'm sure you've seen it, people still avoid disagreement. What's really going on there?
They do. I think it's human nature to avoid disagreement. I think it's human nature to be we don't like to be uncomfortable. And disagreement and conflict is often taken personally and often makes us feel uncomfortable. So we try to avoid it, whether you're a parent or you're in, whether you're in work, wherever it is, and there's disagreement, it's just uncomfortable. And so we tend to avoid things that are uncomfortable, and and conflict is traditionally one of them that we just try to avoid. But when we do that, that leads to much worse implications down the road. When people are staying silent or they're not addressing the conflict, it turns into something bigger and it affects the culture of an organization. And it is really something that is a challenge to many organizations, and particularly in retention and turnover. People don't leave companies because of the job. They leave companies because of the culture. And they leave companies when they don't feel their voice is heard. And I think that's a challenge for any organization in today's age, because people can probably work anywhere they want, but they're going to choose the place that has the best culture. And in my view, the culture is best when it thrives when we ask for other opinions and we have some disagreement. And disagreement's a sign of growth and a sign of tension, but it is a sign that things are moving and happening and people want to be involved with the change. And which is often the most challenging thing to deal with in an organization. So
that's
kind of an overview.
Yeah. I was at a mid-year meeting one time years ago, and the Blue Angels were guest speakers. And one of the things that stood out to me, Shelby, was after every mission or every flight or every air show, they went into a room, and I still remember this like it was yesterday. They called it nameless, rankless communication. Forget that I'm your boss. Forget that I'm a leader. Forget who I am. When you're flying at 500 miles per hour, if I did something wrong, it's life or death. That's the type of culture I think that a lot of leaders are missing. Yes, it's not life or death typically in businesses. But at the end of the day, it can become a competitive advantage for leaders to deal with disagreement or dissension. What's the best advice you would provide people or leaders how to handle that?
I would say, first of all, I completely agree. And it is a competitive advantage. And it is something that, and I feel too, another contributing issue is in the age of AI, people can, the age of the internet, people can solve problems on their own. They can get any answer they want from anywhere they want, and they could do it on their own. So there's no incentive to talk to each other and to problem solve together. And I think that's something that's really missing in a lot of our work cultures, is that we're stuck in our silos and we're doing our things, but we're not communicating to other departments or other people that are involved with it. Like the sales team isn't really talking to the marketing team. So there's not cohesiveness in the strategy. So there's some missing pieces that I think all of this technology is leading to. However, the best ideas and the best way that we can execute any business operation is talking to each other and creating solutions together. And, you know, a marketing plan is going to be so much better implemented when you align with the strengths of your sales team. And when you produce that together and actually talk about a strategy together, that's really where the magic happens. But often we see defensiveness when those conversations happen, because it's not usually a part of a process. So I do fundamentally believe that leaders in organizations, whether it be the C-suite leaders or HR leaders, or even your mid-level managers, like those people need to be having these conversations and asking for feedback and asking people that are actually working there, like, what's going on and how can we improve this? How can this be better? Because that's often where the answer is. Now, even if allowing for that space and that agency to be able to have those discussions, maybe the employees or maybe the manager isn't going to get what they want, but fundamentally they're going to be more involved and more invested within the culture of the company if they're asked and if they are involved in the decision-making process. And I think that's something that a lot of managers don't want to deal with. So there's a lot of reasons for that, but it's the uncomfortable conversations, but it's the opportunity and how we can create together. And that's what I think is being missed in today's management, particularly as we innovate technologically, that we've got to innovate in the way that we talk to each other. We all know that AI gets much better and much more focused the more clarity you have in what you tell it. And if you as a company don't have that clarity, then you're not going to get the product that you want. So that's what I try to foster within organizations. I think there are a few steps to get there, but I mean, it's just the first thing that you've got to do is create the space for it. And that looks different in every organization, whether that's an online opportunity or whether that's a sit down and have a meeting or a huddle in the mornings, whatever that looks like. So there's that human connection that's taking place, and we all kind of understand each other first. So that's
how does a leader know if they have a communication problem?
How does a leader know if they have a communication problem? Is that what you asked?
Yes.
I think there are a few ways. If you have a lot of outward tension, that's a communication problem. If you have a lot of silence and a lot of agreement and people aren't contributing, that's a fundamental communication problem where people are not, they don't feel empowered to contribute and they don't feel empowered to give their opinions and they don't feel empowered to be involved. That means that there's something about the structure that has felt prohibitive in the past and they don't feel comfortable contributing. And I think there's a gift that you can give as a leader, you can give your employees and the people you're working with by having those conversations. That makes a tremendous difference in how your daily operations are going to work and also how your future communications are going to work when there is like massive, massive issues that confront you. I mean, think back to the pandemic, which was 6 years ago now. That's not that long ago. But those were major, major transitions that had to happen overnight. And that was some of the companies that survived that and through the layoffs, through all the stuff that had to happen. The companies that survived that were the ones that communicated the best through that and that had a structure in place already where they could adapt and their culture was ready to adapt. But when you allow that agency, that's where that happens. But I do think the silence and the lack of contribution is one of the first signs that you have a lot of conflict that is unrecognized.
So true. I remember back also when I was VP of sales and my CEO used to come in the room with one of his executive board meetings. We all were either very happy and we were talking to each other or we were very quiet and just not talking. And then Mike would come in and goes, too much silence. What's the elephant in the room?
Yeah. And then nobody wants to say it because they might be scared of the authority. I worked at a college for a long time and sitting in the board meetings and the faculty meetings, there's not a lot of discussion, but that could be, it could be that the authority has discouraged it. It could be that, I mean, people just generally aren't comfortable with, they're not being taught how to advocate and how to participate because they haven't had that in their schooling, they haven't had that in their classes and what have you. So it's just different. It's just, and the same is true as being at a university. I was at a university for a long time. Then being in work, it's like you have a handbook, but now your handbook, how does that actually play out? And the culture actually doesn't exist in the handbook or the mission statement. The culture exists in how people communicate through those things and how can people display that mission and their vision in their daily communication and how they interact with employees. Like all of those are human communication centered. They're not something that's produced in a book. So it's just interesting to the application.
So when leaders handle disagreement, does it affect their authority and the trust that they built?
I think when leaders step in, you don't need to step into every disagreement because there's a lot of disagreements that happen. You know, there's when we talk about disagreements that are happening between manager to manager or employee to employee, like some of those disagreements don't need to be stepped into or micromanaged because it's something that you want to empower your employees to solve the problems on their own. If it's a personal disagreement, maybe you don't like the perfume that your fellow employee is wearing, or that you're a manager and somebody's late. If you're the manager above them, stepping in is something that takes away your other manager's power. So there's power in letting people discover how to solve the conflict on their own. There's a lot of people that are uncomfortable with that. There's a lot of training that's involved with that. It's communication training. It's conflict training. And there's pieces to do to help with that. But as the manager, I think one of the most respectful things that they can do is actually step in and talk about the conflict and talk about what the impacts are and actually help resolve it because that helps people move forward. And even though not everybody's going to be happy at the end of it, at least they're happy that you stepped in and you stood up and you addressed something that makes a big difference in the organization. So there's,
I think a lot of what you just talked about was really people want to be heard really at the end of the day.
They
want to feel like they have some input into what's transpiring. I work here. I want to have some at least hear me or listen to me. And I may not have the right answer, but at least be open to hearing me. And that's, I think, really important in today's leadership skills today.
Especially when you hire other leaders or you go through a hiring process and hire someone to work for your company. One of the organizations that I consult with, they have a great structure of feedback and they have a great structure of empowering their junior leaders to be able to address some of these conflicts and issues on their own. So they can help others solve the problem. So there's a level of empowerment that happens when you give them independence. You hire them for a reason. You hire them because they're smart and they can solve problems. Let them do that. And maybe it will be incorrect, or maybe a policy might not be followed to the exact T. But the benefit that you get is that you can have a conversation about it, and you have a space where you're allowed to try, and you're allowed to learn, and you're allowed to be involved and really help with the situation. So
I think one of the underlying themes here is don't take it personal.
100%. Yeah. I have two youngish kids, right? So and I have a teenage daughter. So many people can probably empathize with where I'm at in my life, but it's separating yourself from, it's separating your personal side from the task that's being accomplished or needs to be accomplished. And often in a work environment, we're arguing about the way that we're doing things, which is really a task or an objective problem. And it's good to have discussions about that, because the way that we might have it there might be a different approach that might be good. So it's usually task oriented, but a lot of people take that personally. And I think that's human nature, is that when we feel that there's conflict, it's like, oh, they must be mad at me from the last time we did this. And so we take it personally rather than actually get in and try to solve the problems. It happens with kids. It happens with adults. It happens in with my significant other. You know, it just happens. Those happen because sometimes we just allow that to, we just, as leaders, I think it's important to remind people, and especially as a leader, if you are stepping into a conflict or you're addressing a tension, just say that. We're talking about what's happening here. This has nothing to do personally. This has everything to do with how we can fix this problem internally and how we can move forward together. And I think that's even just a simple framing of that can make a big difference when you're approaching a situation like that. I think for the leader too, it helps provide a context so they can separate themselves from it. And like, this is a problem for the organization, not between you two or not between you and me. So those conversations are tough to have. And especially as a leader, it's tough to take feedback sometimes, but oftentimes that is the best way to develop trust with who you're working with and who you're leading. So it's a fine line, but I think there's just that reminder. So there's a benefit to being trained how to do that.
Couldn't agree with you more. There's such an important distinction between disagreement itself and the problem. The real issue is whether we have the communication skill and leadership maturity to use it well. We're going to take a short break, and when I come back, I want to go deeper into Shelby's signature methodology, the invitational dissent, and how leaders can invite truth without creating unnecessary conflict. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back with more insights and frameworks to help you elevate your brand and your influence. Stay tuned. And we're back. I'm Jeff Brandeis, and this is the Authority Playbook on Now Media Television. Let's dive deeper.
Welcome back to the Authority Playbook. Stay connected to this show and every Now Media TV favorite, live or on demand, anytime you like. Download the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and unlock nonstop bilingual programming in English and in Spanish. On the go, on the move, catch the podcast version at www.nowmedia.tv. I'm back with Shelby Jo Long, CEO, founder of Core Leadership, and we are talking about how leaders can turn disagreement into a tool for better decisions, stronger teams, and greater authority. Before the break, we looked at why disagreement can either damage a culture or sharpen it. Now I want to focus on Shelby's methodology, invitational dissent, because the phrase alone changes the energy of the conversation. It suggests that dissent does not have to be combative. It can be designed, welcomed, and used. So this segment, Shelby, let's unpack the practical leadership behind your framework. I want the audience to understand how leaders can invite honest pushback without creating defensiveness, chaos, or personal attacks. The goal is to show disagreement as a structured leadership practice. So Shelby, when you saw the problem, you saw organizations that led you to create the Invitational Dissent. Why?
Great question. And I got to give you a background first of my kind of my worldview and the way that I approach things. And a lot of that comes from my involvement in collegiate debate and high school debate. I've been a speaker since I was in elementary school with 4-H and all that. And then I got into debate when I was in high school, and then I continued it in college. And then I continued it after that. And I coached for a college team for over 20 years. And I had the opportunity to travel around the world and participate in these amazing discussions across cultures. And it was just an incredible time. And I was able to give the gift of gab and argumentation to other students. And as I was going through the process of this, what debate does, to give you an idea, is that you practice, and it's like a sport. So I had debate practice every day, and I went to tournaments 4 to 5 times a semester. It's like a college sport. We traveled all over the U.S. to do it. I took my debate teams all over to Ireland, to Morocco, to Mexico to do this, and compete against some of the best talent out there. Harvard, you know, Oxford, some United States Air Force Academy, some really amazing programs. And so there, you were constantly surrounded by talent and very, very smart people. And the way that your debate rounds would work is that you and your partner would get your topic 20 minutes before the round. And so you have 20 minutes to prepare for your 7-minute speech and your debate. And which for many people does not seem like a lot of time. And it's really not a lot of time. But in that space, you learn that there's a structure in the way that we argue and the way that we can have a discussion, a formalized discussion, in a short amount of time. And really, it was that skill set that I bring into the boardroom now, because there's a way that we can do this to teach people or to encourage people to present in a certain way. So we have an idea what the argument is, and we have an idea what the point they're trying to get across is, and we have an idea of why they're saying this, and we have an idea of what the pros and the cons and the consequences are. So there's a format for that, and that's what I learned in the world of debate. And that's something, I mean, I taught a college for 15 years, 18 years. It's something that people aren't necessarily, maybe they're taught how to write that way, but they sure don't. So in developing arguments and using evidence, and that's a way that we're all taught to write in college, maybe, and maybe we're not taught how to do that, but that's a way that we can have a really good discussion about that. So we would go to these debate tournaments, and we'd have these hefty discussions, and sometimes it would get emotional, but if you separated yourself from that, which the best debaters did, you had a really good discussion about a major world issue, like the war in Iraq or environmental policy, or pick your political issue that's hot today, right? And that's what we'd always discuss. But we did it in a formatted way. And whether you won or lost the round, which you always found out, you sat through the feedback session, you always understood whether you won or lost in the round. It didn't really, I mean, it did matter because you always wanted to win. But even if you didn't matter, even if you didn't win, you still had a great discussion, and you'd shake hands with everybody and you'd walk out of the room, and then you go on to the next round. And I think that format, I think, is so important in business, because there's, first of all, creating a space for that discussion, but then like learning how that discussion can happen and how we can build upon ideas together. I think the debate world really prepared me for, I love being on boards, and some people hate being on boards because they have to sit and listen to things and listen to everybody's opinion. But I like being in a space where all these great ideas are building upon each other, and you're coming to a solution that makes everybody happy, or at least maybe it doesn't make everybody happy, but it allows everybody to be involved in the decision, which that just alone being able to participate in the discussion is something that makes us want to be more involved, and we want to be involved in solving the problem. We want to be involved in making the organization better. So I think there's a, from the skills and the format of debate, that's really inspired me to this, for this invitational dissent in organizations, because it doesn't exist in many organizations because people are generally afraid of conflict. You could talk to probably anybody in HR, and they deal with conflict every single day. And conflict is not fun to deal with because there's not a structure to deal with it. And this is a structure where you can have a conversation, you can have a discussion about how it impacts every single person, and then actually create a solution that at least is appeases people and involves them. So that's kind of where the whole idea of the invitational dissent methodology happens, because there's a lot of people, there's a lot of organizations that aren't having those difficult conversations. And I think particularly in the last 6 years, when the changes have been so fast and COVID happened and the shutdown happened and we had to follow all these policies and adapt all these policies and what the profit making engine to the world around us, that was a real challenge. And these changes happened so fast. And now with AI in the past 2 years, that has completely transformed our organizational culture, because the organizations that aren't adapting are falling behind. And also, if they're involving AI, they're laying some people off because they found out they don't need them anymore. So there's a lot of anxiety around that. And I just don't see, and perhaps it's the culture of the fast changes too, but the organizations that are going to sustain this and really come out on the other side with their employees are going to be the ones that have the conversations about the change and allow people to be a part of that discussion. So that's kind of overall where the method comes from. A little bit of background about that, but there's so many changes happening that it's affecting everybody, and we've got to have the conversation about it.
Very true. So. And speaking about change, how can a leader actually introduce your invitational dissent into a team that's used to being silence, people pleasing, they avoid, confrontation? How can the leader actually take control?
It's not a change that's going to happen overnight, but it is a change that can be implemented throughout your processes. If you find that you're wanting more discussion with your teams and people are having a lot of conflict, it's often because they don't know what's going on. And so just a basic check-in. Again, the first step is creating the space for it. So when is this going to happen? Do you set aside a Monday morning for a half an hour and everybody's in the same meeting and we're all talking about the same thing? Do we have a morning huddle and talk about what happens during the day? Do we have quarterly check-ins? There's just got to be a space for that. Another way to kind of involve that and to create a space for it is to make it, you don't have to have a meeting, but allow a channel for that feedback, or if people have concerns, they can contribute anonymously or they can contribute personally, whatever that is. There's got to be just some time set aside. So I think that's the first step. The second step is to encourage the participation and encourage people to bring their ideas to the table. And it's a foreign concept to many people because they're just punching the clock. They're following things. They're doing their problems. They're helping using AI or Google to solve their problems, and they're doing it themselves. People aren't taught to do that. So it's creating the space for that, but then also encouraging as a leader, this is a space where I want to hear from you. There's got to be the term is like psychological safety around that, right? Your job isn't going to be affected because of this. We're going to create a safe space where you can say what you want around this certain issue. I want to encourage you to be, it's more of an empathetic and listening type of leadership that is encouraged in the second step, because then you can talk to them about what is bothering them and what the issues are and make it a safe space to do that. So those are kind of the first two things. And then you get into the more, you know, and as your organization evolves and is ready for that, then, and as you create that culture and that environment, again, this isn't something that happens overnight, then I think the real magic happens when you get all those leaders together and everybody's talking about what's going on. We have the space for that. And then you're talking about the real problems. There are a lot of real problems in business, but you're talking about things and you're allowing people to contribute ideas. Your ideas will get better. Your leaders are going to be encouraged to be more creative and more involved and all of those things. And it's just going to make for a better environment for decision-making. So it's kind of three steps where that creativity emerges after we kind of create the space and learn how to participate. I've been a public speaking instructor for public speaking and debate for over 20 years. I know that public speaking is the most disliked thing by most people. There's percentage ranges between 75 and 90%. Of people that just don't want to communicate. But creating a space and encouraging that communication and almost not making them be a part of that, but saying that's a part of this culture is that we've all got to talk and we have to communicate to get through these issues and to grow. So it's creating the expectation and then following through on that. And so it's kind of I say it's a three-step thing, but it's different for every organization. So
I love the three steps. I love the three steps, Shelby. Thank you for sharing that. And this gives leaders a really powerful shift. Instead of waiting for the disagreement to happen or to erupt, we can create a healthier way for it to enter the room. We're going to take a short break. Coming up next, I want to talk about communication itself, because the way I speak, the way I listen, the way I challenge and respond has a direct impact on the authority I build. Jeff Brandeis, we'll be right back.
We'll be right back with more insights and frameworks to help you elevate your brand and your influence. Stay tuned. And we're back. I'm Jeff Brandeis, and this is the Authority Playbook on Now Media Television. Let's dive deeper.
Welcome back. I'm here with Shelby Jo Long, a communicator, strategist, professional speaker, and founder of Core Leadership. We've been talking about disagreement, and trust me, I won't get into a debate with Shelby. As a leadership advantage.
I welcome it.
I'll lose. But now I want to focus on the skill underneath it all, communication. Because authority is not just what I know, it's how clearly I communicate what I know and how well I listen under the pressure and how effectively I help people move from tension to action. In our next segment, let's connect directly to the heart of the authority playbook. I want to explore communication as a credibility engine. The conversation will lead leaders to see that authority is built in the moments where stakes are high, conflict, alignment, decision-making, and public communication. Shelby, what separates a leader who simply talks from a leadership top, I'll call it from the top of the tower, the ivory tower, versus those that actually build authority through communication?
It's the difference between a leader and a manager, right? There's a manager makes sure all the boxes are checked and that we're following all the things and that we're following all the things that we're supposed to do and we're accomplishing our daily tasks and meeting our SOPs and, you know, we're doing all of those things. And a leader is one that might be doing that, but they're also empowering their constituents, employees, whatever that is. They're empowering the people around them to solve problems on their own and to not have to work by the checklist, right? There's a leadership charisma that is different than being a manager. Now, that's not to say that the manager's role is not important and needs to be done, but leaders are the ones that are doing those things and stepping into their full confidence as a leader. And I think that has a lot to do with your communication style. And there isn't a certain communication style that is appropriate for every single person. We can think of general communication traits that make sense, like leaders have a strong voice and they don't say a lot of ums and they know what they're saying. They're direct and all that. And yes, that is, those are some leadership characteristics that we recognize, but there's a, everybody has their own leadership charisma. And I think that's the, if you want to talk about steps, I think that's the first step in really stepping into a leadership role is understanding what are your strengths. Maybe you're not an extrovert leader that likes to be in front of an audience. That's okay. You don't have to be that one. You can be your, you can be a silent leader, but you've got to do it in your own way and figure out how to fulfill your role in that way. So it's understanding your strengths and stepping into that confidently to be able to lead others around you. Because the more natural and authentic you are in your communication, understanding whether you like to speak or don't like to speak or empower others around you, or you're more introverted or extroverted, or you're quiet rather than loud, you know, by harnessing what is unique to you is something that is going to resonate with your audience more than anything.
I think that's so important as leaders to find themselves as a leader, as opposed to, upon expression, putting themselves into a box where they trying to emulate somebody or be somebody that they're not. It's like, upon expression, finding your true self, really, at the end of the day, to be your own leader.
It really is. I mean, you think about, not to, I'm not trying to be political, but think about like President Obama versus President Trump versus President Bush versus President Biden. They all have, they're all leaders. They were all elected. They all, you know, whether you agree with their politics or not, they were leading this country. They all had different styles of communicating and leading. And yes, that was partially political, but a lot of it had to do with their charisma and their authenticity. Now, authenticity, some audiences resonate with different types of authenticity, but the more authentic you are as a person, the more secure and confident that you are with your skills and who you are, the better it's always going to come across when you're leading others. So
I think people sense it.
People do sense it. 100%. They do sense it. Yeah.
So Shelby, I know you have three, I know you have a three phrase favorite. So I'm just going to let you just kind of dive into it on your own and share with the audience the three things that you always love to talk about.
Well, and I kind of, I talked about it a little bit in the last segment, but I think that knowing yourself and understanding your position and understanding who you are is one of the first things I think is so important to creating a discussion and having a discussion about this and being confident to have these discussions. And it's so important to advocate for yourself. And that's one thing I try to impress upon leaders and C-suite leaders in particular, that you have what you need to follow in the organization, but creating and understanding what you stand for and what you're advocating isn't about an agenda. It's about, you're going to talk about a change and talk about something challenging, but you have it prepared. You're not just giving a one-liner Twitter argument. You're giving an argument, but then you're giving evidence and reasoning for it. And not everybody's going to disagree with, or not everybody's going to agree with it. Some people are going to disagree with it, but the more time you put into developing your reasons behind it, that's really when your audience is going to be really excited to hear from you, even if they do disagree with you. So I think that's one of the most important things, is to understand yourself and to understand your role in the organization and what that means. I think that's the, so worrying about your advocacy and how you advocate for yourself. Also encouraging others around you to advocate for themselves. And that's a skill that we talked about earlier, like creating the space for it, encouraging people to be involved, more empathetic and listening leadership. That's where the good, really great conversations start. And then there's the agitation section, which, yes, you know what you agree with, but then when you know what you agree, you know what you advocate for, you know what you stand for, but that's not what everybody else believes, and that's okay. And having the conversation about it and again, creating the space for that conversation to happen and encouraging people to advocate for themselves, that's when we agitate a little bit and we move towards a solution together rather than siloed, I think is so important for, I mean, that's what the whole process is about. You're inviting dissent, you're inviting people to be involved in that. And that act alone makes a tremendous difference in your culture. And then you got to take action. And I think that's the advocate, agitate, and then activate, and where you actually have to do it and have those conversations. Because again, I'll use the reference that I did earlier. We can read about everything and we can talk about everything and we can go into ChatGPT and put a plan together, but we're not going to come to a solution or have a conversation until we actually do it. And so we have to take action and step forward with that, even though it might be uncomfortable and even though we might not win the argument. If you create a safe space for that to happen, then it's going to just make that bigger difference with the people that you're leading. So I think those are important to remember as a leader, because it's being confident with what you have, but then also inviting the conversation around you.
Definitely key points and things that our listeners should be jotting down, taking notes feverishly. But what we're encouraging our leaders to become are more clear, more direct, and more trustworthy. But how they do that without becoming more rigid or intimidating to their teams? Is there a style or something that they can gently implement this approach?
I would say, I mean, I think it's different for every person, first of all, but I would also say that how important it is to lead from empathy rather than leading from authority. And, you know, we all know that person that's going to tout their authority in an organization. I'm the president, I'm the CEO, and, you know, leading with authority, building arguments from authority, like, you should believe me because I have a PhD. You should believe me because I'm the doctor. Whatever that is, yes, that's appropriate in certain situations. When I go to the doctor, I go to the doctor because they're pros and they know it. And I arguments from authority, that's where I want that. Like, they're giving me advice on what I should do. They're the pros. They've done that before. But in an organization where you're all working together, you might have the most experience. You might have the most authority, but that's not the way to approach a conversation, because that sometimes can shut down conversations. And well, I have 20 years of experience. So, you know, that's going to make people feel like, oh, I don't know if I feel like contributing then, because I don't have 20 years of experience and I haven't been a 5 or 6 time CEO, whatever that is. It's leading with the authority, but in an organization, not leading with that authority and rather leading by eliciting arguments and eliciting conversation and being more authentic is the way to start to break down those barriers and encourage people around you to speak. So I think that's
I forgot who it was, but they talked about when you ask someone, why'd you do that? It's like your mom scolding you or your dad scolding you, or you know that you did something wrong, as opposed to asking someone, help me understand the rationale behind what you did. Basically saying the same, you're asking someone to explain themselves, but you're not putting someone on the defensive. That's kind of the empathy that you're looking at and talking about.
Yeah, and it's more supportive communication than it is defensive communication. The supporting communication is a more empathetic approach where you're being more invitational and you're not trying to strategic, like, push an agenda. And, you know, the defensive communication happens when, you know, people get offended and they're like, well, I didn't do that, and just get very defensive. And that's really where our, like, negative emotions begin to evolve and be involved with the arguments. And really it's trying to understand the other side of it before you make a decision. I mean, I think of, you know, conversations with my parents, and conversations with my kids. It's like, why should I do that? Because I said so. And in an organization, that's probably not the best approach, because you might say so, but you're surrounded by intelligent individuals that are giving a lot to your organization. Give them a reason. And it's not that you need to justify everything that you do, but it's more inviting when you talk about the reason and how you made that decision. And quite frankly, after once you have this in your organization and start to be more open and encourage this leadership, those conversations get so much easier, because then you can still make, as a leader, you can still make the decision that you feel is best, but after considering what everybody else said, maybe your mind will be open to something else. Maybe not. But you don't know until you actually invite it. And that's why I think it's such an important piece to develop into your culture.
Surround yourself with people who are smarter than you and get the ideas and then lead from there at the end of the day. Critical playbook 100%. Move. Yeah. Communication is not soft. Communication determines whether strategy becomes action, whether tension becomes insight, and whether people trust the person leading the room. We're going to take a short break. And when we come back, I want to bring this conversation into the leadership alignment, innovation, and the kind of culture where better ideas can actually survive. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back with more insights and frameworks to help you elevate your brand and your influence. Stay tuned. And we're back. I'm Jeff Brandeis, and this is the Authority Playbook on Now Media Television. Let's dive deeper.
Welcome back to the Authority Playbook. Stay connected to the show and every Now Media TV favorite, live or on demand, anytime you like. Download the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and unlock nonstop bilingual programming in English and in Spanish. You're on the move, on the go? Catch the podcast version at www.nowmedia.tv. I'm Jeff Brandeis, and I'm back with Shelby Jo Long, CEO and founder of Core Leadership. We're going to close out today's conversation by looking at what happens when leaders stop fearing disagreement and start using it to build alignment, innovation, and growth. After all, every organization wants innovation. Every team wants better ideas, but better ideas often come with tension, challenge, and uncomfortable conversations. The question is whether I can lead a culture that's strong enough to hold that. And in our final segment, let's move from individual leadership communication into organizational culture. I want to explore how alignment is created without artificial agreement, how innovation depends on productive tension, and how leaders can create environments where people challenge ideas while still moving together. Shelby, you advise companies on leadership, alignment, and strategic growth. Where does leadership teams usually lose alignment first?
I feel that there is typically a separation between the mission and vision and things that they set out for the company that are so important that we spend money, we bring people in, we have this mission and this vision and this and what we're going to do in this company. And I feel like sometimes that's separated from the people that are actually working there. And I think that's one of the first places to think about is how is this mission and vision and procedures, how is that living in our employees? And how is it living within our leadership? And how are we displaying these values every day? And it's not something that you just post on a wall. It's something that we build into our practices. And fundamentally, a culture exists in communication, and you can have your business culture and your mission and your vision and your main principles that you work under, but unless those are being communicated about and unless those are actually in your practice, those are things that seem really separated from the company and the employees of the company. So that's often where I see, and that has everything to do with your communication practices and how often it's reminded and how often you have this connection that's happening between your different departments, your HR, your business department, your, you know, It's we are all working in our silos and we're not working together under the same thing. So there's a difference in handing somebody a handbook and then actually living it and talking about these things. So I think that's, you know, there's always a challenge when an individual and a professional is working for an organization, because you have the organizational values and that might differ than some of your values. And that's okay, because you're hired by the organization to be a part of that. But it's just reminding people to step into their authenticity, but then also you represent this organization. So I think that's something that, that's something I see pretty frequently with organizations is that. The other space that I see that, which is not, it's nobody's fault. It just happens. It's just kind of what, it's just kind of the habits we get into, particularly after COVID and after all these major changes are happening, is that a lot of decisions and change, it's the change management piece, that a lot of these changes and decisions are happening so fast, and not that we need to involve everybody, but we've got to involve that and have more of a rationale behind that and have these conversations to be able to bring people to the table. Because I think that's something that allows more agency, particularly with your leaders that you're bringing in and that you hire and that are leading other people in your organization. I think that makes a big difference. So it's just the communication is the glue that holds everything together. And when the organizational values aren't known and infiltrated into that communication, I find that to be a challenge moving forward. That's why creating the space and actually having the conversations is so important.
We see it so often, though, but when the executives appear, we're aligned publicly, but privately, mm-hmm. we disagree on the direction. What happens?
Sure. Happens all the time. Yeah.
And what's the result? Yeah. What transpires? Is it bad for the employees? Is it bad for the company? The leader loses credibility? Messages being sent out to the public or your clients?
I think it's a trust issue fundamentally. And if you're saying, if the leaders, PR people are saying different things to the community than actually is being done within the organization, that erodes trust. And yeah. that takes away from your ability to have these conversations. And if there's got to be some link between what is being said, you know, in the marketing of the company and then what is actually happening in the company. So there's got to be, if that the less tension there is in those messages, the easier it is to have conversations and solve these problems. But then also I don't think it's a responsibility, but I think a good leader is going to explain a rationale behind it. This is why we're doing this at this time. You know, and this is aligning it's the strategy, and I'm a strategist. I love talking about business strategy. I do it all day long, but talking about the overall strategy and the overall goals might not be the vision of your company, but it might be where your company is moving. And the more information it's not that they need all the information, but there's just some direction that the employees can have or the leaders can know about, I think is really important. Because what are we all here working for? Is it to get more customers? Is it to get more people enrolled in the college? Is it to get people enrolled in the movement? Nonprofits deal with this all the time, particularly when they're trying to fundraise. How do you connect your cause in an age where people don't have a lot of extra money to give, and how do you connect your cause and what you're doing to the hearts of your audience? So I think that's really where a separation happens.
We talked about this a little earlier, but how can leaders actually surface tension before it becomes confusion, political, or gets stalled on execution? Or what steps can a leader actually look for?
Ask them.
Communicate.
I mean, that's a simple, there's the create the space, but I mean, it's actually ask them to be involved. And it sounds like a very simple step, and it is a simple step. But if it's something that hasn't been happening before, that's where to start. Because often I talked earlier, our culture is grassroots. It's in our communication. So the culture exists. If you're at a coffee shop, the culture doesn't exist in the back room where the dishes are being washed, even though everybody's probably involved with that. The culture exists in the person that is taking the coffee order and how that's all delivered, right? That's where the feeling is. I go to the same coffee shop all the time. And it's because I like the coffee, but I also like the culture, and I like that they know my drink, and I like that they always say hi, and I get to bring my dog. You know, I like that about that place. And it's the same thing, that internal, that feeling that we have when we walk into a business or with our customers, or even if you're a B2B business, you gotta create a culture that's aligned with who you're communicating with. So it's asking, it's involving those people on the, I gotta bring you back to a lecture I used to do all the time, and it's a really impactful lecture. But when organizations started organizing and started producing a lot, that was the Industrial Revolution. And that's where we were on assembly lines. Like, somebody made the tube of toothpaste, somebody filled the tube of toothpaste, and another person put the lid on the tube of toothpaste. And the more efficient that you did your job, the faster we could produce and the more we could sell. But we were really losing the human communication in that, because maybe there was a better way to go about things. And I kind of feel like we're somewhat back there. It's like, you make the tube of toothpaste and you do it the best that you can, so the next person can do their job the best. But there's no engagement there. There's no talking there. Maybe there is a different way to do that. And really, as we get more technological, I think we're getting into that space more. But I really do think it's as simple as involve them, ask them, give them reasons for why you're doing what you're doing. That's the simplest answer I can give for that.
So is there a cadence? Is there a time frame to work with your management team, to communicate with your employees, so it doesn't look like it's forced or planned? How do you actually recommend your leaders to be able to build that communication, build that trust on a regular basis?
If it's something that hasn't been, it's like a marketing plan. You got to roll it out, right? You've got to roll it out, put it on the calendar, make people aware that they're doing it. If you have a company retreat that you do, it's going to be different for every organization. It depends on what you're already doing. And if you're not doing it, it's just taking one step at a time to create the space for it. So what's a way that you can still produce that you can organization, but still have space where people can get together and talk about what's going on? And it's going to be different for every organization. But I think as a leader, you've got to think about, how can I do this? How can I introduce this without making it this big move? But I speak with organizations all the time. Sometimes everything that needs to be done seems overwhelming, but there's just that first step of how do I begin to involve this as a part of my culture? And it's just asking them and finding the right time to do it.
Kind of like taking the first baby step or getting on the bike. You got to start someplace.
Exactly. Sure. You got to start somewhere. You got to take that action. Yeah. So
Shelby, my last question before we close out the episode here. What is the biggest takeaway you want leaders to remember if they want to turn disagreement into a true competitive advantage?
I don't want people to run from conflict anymore. as leaders, we're constantly going to have conflict in our lives, and running from it does nothing but push it underground and make it worse. And it makes it a firework rather than a small fire, right? So it's, you don't have to put it out. You don't have to eliminate conflict, but figure out a way within your institution that you can manage it and that you can use it to be able to create more conversations and really bring people into their creative space where they can start to use it to their advantage. And it's, uh, I, I think that's the conflict is not the end. It's just the beginning. And it's the beginning of change. And we all have to change. We all have to adapt. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here. So be prepared for that.
Awesome. Shelby, this has been such a valuable conversation because it reframes disagreement as something leaders need to do and not have fear in doing it. When they know how to invite, structure it, and lead through it, disagreement can actually become one of the most powerful tools for better decisions, stronger teams, and real authority. Shelby, this has been great. How can our listeners and viewers want to learn more about you? Where can they find you?
Yeah, you can find me on all the social media, Shelby Jo Long. I have a YouTube channel, which is Core Leadership, and I talk about this stuff all the time. I have a website, shelbyjolong.com, if you want to find that. I just like working with people, and I like helping people discover the possibilities of opening their communication and understanding themselves better, but then also understanding how to empower their team in a better way. So,
awesome. Thank
a
you.
Different way.
Thank you. For everyone watching, I know today's conversation challenges you to look at conversations happening inside your business. Are people saying what needs to be said? Are ideas being tested? Are leaders creating space for truth before decisions are made? Because authority is not built by avoiding hard conversations. It's built by leading them well. Thank you for joining me on the Authority Playbook. I'm Jeff Brandeis, and I'll see you next time as we continue building the systems, strategies, and mindset required to lead with authority. Thank you for joining.
Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks, Shelby. Hey, Shelby, if you don't mind, can I ask you one more thing?
Yeah.
You mind doing a quick testimonial?
Sure.
If you would, that'd be awesome.
Do you want to ask me a question?
No, you can just add a little bit and make it up if you wish.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Really enjoyed the depth of the conversation, liked the how things were moving forward. This is a conversation that I could have all day long, but it's really nice to have a structured conversation to move forward. So thank you for inviting the conversation, and thank you for getting this important idea out into the world.